This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
Days, 12 hours, 48 minutes, 37 seconds until George W. Bush voluntarily leaves office. We are counting down the seconds here. I've got my backwards Bush clock that Tom Dwyer Automotive here in Portland gave me. Thank you, Tom. And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. A lot in the news we'll be getting to as we continue through the program. Looks like Rupert Murdoch is buying Dow Jones, and so I'll have to cancel my subscription to the Wall Street Journal. And lots of other strange things in the news, which we will get to. But and it's also Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls throughout the day on any topic you want to talk about. You want to talk about psychology, you want to talk about science, you want to talk about, obviously, politics. Anything you want, we'll be getting into it throughout this day. But in our first hour of the program, as always, Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent from Vermont. I think of him as America's senator. He's not a Democrat. He's not a Republican. He represents Vermont brilliantly and ably, and I think in a larger sense, he represents many of us all over the nation, and frankly, all over the world. In as much as the United States affects the world's policies, and so I hope I'm not buttering up here too much, Bernie. But you're really a hero to a lot of people, and a lot of people missed you last week. It's great to have you back.
Good to be with you, Tom.
A lot on our plate here to talk about today. First of all, Iraq. We have another Republican defection, right. Pete Domenici. Is this a sign of things?
This is significant. It's significant because Domenici is a longtime senior senator, a Republican from New Mexico, carries a lot of weight. He follows Dick Lugar, who is the former chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, and George Voinovich of Ohio. And I think you've got a number of other senators who are kind of sitting on the edge. And I think we're looking at kind of a critical mass phenomenon that the more that go, the more will go. And I think, as I've said on this show many times, this war, this disastrous war, will end when a number of Republicans walk into the White House and say, Mr. President, your policy is wrong. It's not working. The people back home want change. Sorry, we're off the team. And when that happens, the war ends.
Yeah, and I'm expecting that that's going to happen within the next 6 or 8 months, simply because the Republicans know that if they run with the war in 2008, they're going to lose. And so
this is making the Republican Party's life, not only on the war, but significantly on the war, very, very difficult. And you have a lot of people out there in the House and the Senate who are going to run for election who know that the people in their districts, in their states, believe that Bush is wrong on almost every issue, especially Iraq. And as that election day becomes closer and closer, these guys are going to part company with the president.
Yeah. Now, the immigration bill went down in flames the week before last. It seems that the Real ID Act was probably one of the things that really put the nail in the coffin for many conservatives. And frankly, for me, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the whole issue.
It would take us an hour at least to really discuss all aspects of the bill. And I'm sorry I wasn't on the show last week to get into it a little bit, but what you have is a bill which is more than 300 pages long. It is long and complicated, dealing with all aspects of immigration. To my mind, the way to approach this bill is to divide it in half and say, okay, what do we do about the very serious problem of illegal immigration? 12 million people in this country, porous borders, clearly employers in many parts of the country are hiring illegal workers with impunity. How do you deal with that? I think there is a broad consensus. We've got to strengthen our borders. We have to hold employers accountable. It is not acceptable that in California, Texas, elsewhere, there are these companies that hire hundreds and hundreds of illegal workers. Everybody knows they're illegal, and nothing happens to the employers. You got to change that. The most contentious aspect of the illegal immigrant issue is, what do you do with 12 million people in this country right now? Some of our right-wing people, friends, think, well, we got to pick up everybody in the middle of the night, throw them out of the country. That is not going to happen. That should not happen. And I think, roughly speaking, the kind of path towards citizenship, which is not quote-unquote amnesty, which the bill dealt with, is a step in the right direction. It means getting people to the end of the line, making sure that they're obeying the law, making sure that they're working, paying taxes. Now, if they do all of these things, they get at the end of the line, and there will be a path to citizenship. I could support that. But what I could not support, and why I voted against this bill, helped lead the opposition against this bill, is what it does in terms of legal, L-E-G-A-L, immigration. And this did not get a lot of attention in the media. But, Tom, the truth of the matter is that virtually every major multinational corporation strongly and aggressively supported this legislation.
Sure.
Now, do you think,
cheap labor.
Pardon me?
Cheap labor, slave labor.
That's it. That's it exactly. Now, do you think that these major corporations from Microsoft on down were sitting up at night worrying about a family of illegal immigrants in Chicago, Illinois? I don't think that was the reason. What this was about is through various types of guest worker programs, the H-2B program, the H-1B program, the H-1A program, J-1 program, various other types of programs. The end result was that if this bill was passed, over a period of years, millions of both low-wage workers would be coming into this country to drive wages down for American workers who are already seeing an increase in poverty and a decline in their wages, and also put a lot of pressure on the professional workers of this country, people in information technology, teachers, nurses, and so forth, by bringing in a lot of lower-wage professional workers from all over the world as well. And at a time when the middle class is already shrinking in this country, when poverty is increasing, when we are losing millions of good-paying jobs, when people in many cases in my state of Vermont and elsewhere are working two or three jobs to cobble together an income, I don't think it makes a lot of sense to bring in millions of low-wage workers into this country to depress wages even further. And that was my main objection. I worked with the AFL-CIO on this in opposition to this legislation. I think we've got to make sure that the next immigration bill protects American workers. All of us know. My father came to this country at the age of 17. I am absolutely pro-immigrant. Immigration is what has given us the vitality and the energy to make us a great country. And we need a strong and positive immigration policy. But we do not need a policy designed by corporate America to continue the depression of wages in this country.
Right. And it was also a program where it took so many years. I mean, my sister-in-law is going through the process of becoming a legal U.S. citizen, and it's about a 4, 5, maybe 6-year process for her. She's about halfway through it. But this program could have taken 2, 3, 4 times that in some cases. And during all that period of time, the people who were at the bottom of the economic ladder, who would most likely be the ones to vote Democratic or progressive, would not be allowed to vote because they weren't citizens. I just think that it should be either really quick or not at all, basically, either quick or the traditional system, because Paul Krugman pointed this out, you know, the progressives who are in favor of this bill are shooting themselves in the foot because the people who would be their constituents won't be able to vote for them.
Well, I looked at it at the people who, well, I didn't look at it in a sense in that way. You could look at it and what's the impact on the Hispanic vote and all that. I just looked at it very simply knowing that in my state, you got thousands and thousands of people at work of 8, 9, 10 bucks an hour. And frankly, they don't need more competition to drive their wages down. And
bottom
you talk
line.
To people in information technology who are finding they're losing their jobs, their wages are going nowhere, and people from other countries are coming in. So I am not xenophobic. I am vigorously opposed to a lot of that racism that we have recently seen, which is absolutely unacceptable. So I am pro-immigration, but we have got to develop an immigration program which does not further attack the economic well-being.
And this appropriately segues us to the issue of the income gap,
right?
If I may.
There was a poll that just came out recently which tells us what other polls have told us, is that while the media may not be catching on and Congress may not be catching on, the American people do understand that the gap between the very richest people in this country, like those CEOs who are now drawing just unbelievable compensation packages, and the middle class is growing wider and wider and wider, and people have increasingly not only economic objections to it. Presumably, we don't have enough money to take care of our veterans. We don't have enough money to end the national disgrace of having the highest rate of childhood poverty in the industrialized world. We have kids in this country who don't have any health insurance, and yet it is acceptable to provide hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the wealthiest 1%. Well, I think the American people are catching on that both from a financial and economic point of view as well as a moral point of view, this is wrong, and they want the Congress to act. And it is amazing to me the degree of timidity that we're seeing in Congress in terms of stepping up to the plate and say, sorry, at the very least, we've got to begin rescinding all of the tax breaks given to the wealthiest 1%, use some of that for deficit reduction, and other parts of that to protect the needs of the middle class and working families of our country.
Brilliantly said. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He will be taking your calls for the rest of the hour. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, airamerica.com. Just click on the Tom Hartman page. It'll give you a link over to our live chat room if you want to drop in and say hi. And also our blog there at airamerica.com. We'll be giving away a book today, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio.
It's the family that grieves for a lost loved one. It's the soldier who won't leave till the job is done. It's the addict trying to turn his life around. It's picking yourself up off the ground when you've been knocked down. We carry on when our lives come undone. We carry on.
21 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, the place where despair is not an option, as Bernie Sanders says. 1-866-303-2270. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls. And Beth in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're up first. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Tom. Senator Sanders, it's a real honor to speak with you. I've watched your career over the years, and I'm so thrilled that you're a senator.
Thank you very much, Beth.
Well, thank you. Thank you for fighting for all of us. I really have a problem because I don't understand, and maybe you have some insight after working with some of these people in Congress in Washington. What is the deal? Why are corporations so short-sighted that they are destroying the largest marketplace in the world? They are destroying this country. Our wages are going down. Our jobs are going overseas. Are they like cattle that forage for grass and then move on? I just don't understand how stupid they are.
Well, Beth, from their perspective, they're not stupid. From their perspective, and this is the saddest part of it all, many of these CEOs no longer consider themselves to be American corporations, no longer believe they have responsibility to the United States, to their workers, but only are looking at very short-term profit margins and CEO compensation packages. So if they can shut down a plant in the United States and move to China and pay people there 50 cents an hour and make a lot more money, they see that as a positive thing. I mean, and perhaps the most clear symbol of this arrogance, this lack of patriotism, if you like, is the former vice president's company, Halliburton. Here you have the vice president of the United States, his own company, moving to Dubai after receiving billions of dollars in no-bid contracts. And I'll tell you something, Beth, now that you raise that issue, when we talk about what corporations are doing, there was a piece in the paper recently, which I knew was coming, and it just came, is that Chrysler is now working in partnership with a Chinese automobile company called the Chery Company, and they are going to be, within a few years, bringing automobiles into the United States. And if we do not address that issue, I think over a period of time, we're going to say goodbye to the American automobile industry and all of those jobs and all of that technology. So you raise a very important question, and the bottom line to my mind is these people who head these large corporations could care less about the United States, and that is an issue that the Congress must deal with.
Kevin in Odessa, Texas, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Yesterday, Tom addressed a House bill, Bill 5851, calling for the end of the money. And buried at the bottom of the bill was a clause that would give control of the Mint and the Treasury to the Federal Reserve. And this kind of comes back to the previous call. I wanted to get your thoughts on this proposed legislation and the continuing privatization of the commons. And I'll just wait for your response to get off the line. And if you haven't heard, Tom can give you some context. Thanks.
Kevin, I'm not familiar with that particular bill in the House. There are a whole lot of pieces of legislation which will not necessarily go anywhere. But I think an issue, and I know Tom does a great job on that, is to keep banging away and remind every American that the economy does not have to be the way it is today. We do not have to see more and more of our fellow Americans slipping into poverty, the middle class shrinking, real wages declining for millions of American workers, and a growing gap between the very, very rich and everybody else. We can change economic policies to make our economy work for everybody and not just the people on top. Unfortunately, there's too little discussion in the media about that, but the American people in their hearts and souls understand it. You know, Bush gets on television, and he says, the economy is doing well, gross national product is up, unemployment is relatively low, things are just going fine. And yet back home, very few people believe that because they're dealing with the reality of having to work 50 or 60 hours a week, losing their health insurance, losing their pensions, not being able to afford to send their kids to college. They know that the economy is not working well for ordinary people, even though it is working extremely well for the people on top. So what we really need is a motivated Congress that basically has the guts to stand up to the big money interest. There are some trade policies coming down the pike very, very shortly. The reauthorization of Fast Track is over. Fast Track has not been reauthorized, which means that we now have the opportunity to develop fundamentally new trade policies. And the bottom line of those trade policies should be that corporate America has got to start developing jobs in the United States of America and not just in China, Mexico, and other low-wage countries.
Yes, well said. 27 minutes past the hour. Senator Bernie Sanders here with us, taking your calls at 866-303-2270 on the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. We'll be back right after this break at the bottom of the hour. Your opportunity to support this program and the radio stations that carry this program by listening carefully for our sponsors and letting them know that you're listening, letting them know that you appreciate their helping keep this program on the air.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
No, it's not going to go on. We're going to take this country back. Welcome back. By the way, Air Americans, head over to AirAmerica.com and click on the Tom Hartman page link right there off the AirAmerica.com homepage. It'll take you to the page for this show where you can participate in our blog. Dave will be picking his favorite entry is the wrong word, his favorite blog posting today, and we'll send along to that person a signed copy, autographed copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And also, you can get there's a link from there to our live chat room where you can drop in and say hi as we continue with our program. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your phone calls, 1-866-303-2270. And Sam in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hey, thank you, and it's an honor. What I'm trying to figure out is how we can bring to light all of the abuses in the voting rules that Tim Griffin personifies. You know, there should probably already be a special prosecutor so that we can prevent another stealing of the election in 2008.
You mean Tim Griffin's caging operations?
Yeah, and all of the, I mean, Greg Palast documented it probably better than I've seen it in print form in his book, Armed Madhouse, all the various methods collectively that the Republican Party used to remove voters from the rolls or disqualify ballots, and how the projected number is going to go from 3.5 million to somewhere around 6 million disqualified primarily Democratic ballots if we don't do something about it.
Well, I think Sam raises a very important issue. If we don't have honest elections, if every vote is not counted, then we got real problems with what's going on in this country, and people absolutely do and and should lose faith in the system. I think what's appropriate there is not only important legislation in Washington and the investigations that Sam talks about, but I think people should be very vigilant in dealing with their own state governments, who often make these decisions about who's going to vote and who's not going to vote, and on their secretaries of state. Sometimes it is just incomprehensible to me to see how the Democrats in various states have allowed some of this stuff to go on. So I think Sam is right. We've got to pay a lot of attention to this issue. I would emphasize putting pressure and observing very closely what goes on in the Secretary of State's office.
Jay in San Diego, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, thank you, Tom, and Senator Sanders. My question to you, Senator, is that, of course, we recognize the need for some sort of national health care policy, and I personally hope it will be a single-payer policy. But if it's not, one thing that concerns me is this tendency for the health care companies to try to use their bureaucracy to stop people from making claims or maybe give up and not press claims, you know, the idea of
Yes. You
send a claim in and they deny it and they
try to
get you out the door. And what can the government do to put some safeguards in place to stop that nonsense and let people, you know, use what
they have? Have you had a personal experience with this?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Although I think it's going to be resolved
to a good,
but I know that there are people out there who have worse experiences than mine.
Now, Jay is absolutely right. One of the absurdities of our current non-healthcare system is the fact that people make a claim. The claim is delayed. You're told that when you thought you had coverage, you were not covered. You got to fight. And a lot of people just give up, which is clearly one of the intentions of the insurance companies. If you give up, they don't have to pay any claim at all. And I think we've got to do the best that we can to make sure that insurance companies pay up and provide the funding for the claims that they're supposed to. But ultimately, I think we have got to move toward a national health care program, and I agree with Jay. I think it should be a single-payer system. And I would just mention to Jay that what we are doing right now, given the power of the insurance companies, given the power of the drug companies, I don't think you're going to see a national movement in Washington for a national health care program. I think we'll probably end up going forward the way they did in Canada, and that is one province broke through there, and then it became a national program. We're going to be introducing legislation which will have the federal government provide financial support and waivers for 10 states in the country who want to move forward with universal health care. My hope and expectation is if this legislation passes, at least some of those states will go forward with a single-payer system, and if it works well, we can have a model which would expand throughout this country. But right now, our health care system, in my view, is really disintegrating. We have 46 million uninsured. The costs are soaring. Workers are being asked to assume more and more of the cost. We need to do what the rest of the industrialized world does, guarantee health care to all people as a right.
Yeah, Bernie, I saw Sicko last Friday, and I got to tell you, you're going to love this movie. It is not only just about the health care system. It is going to be so close to your heart. You're going to absolutely love it, and it really raises these issues. You're saying that did I hear you right? That Canada, that actually one province took it upon themselves to have national health.
What ended up happening is Saskatchewan went forward with a single-payer system against tremendous resistance. It worked well, and eventually it became a national program. So I think if we can get our foot in the door, if it's a state like Vermont or Maine that goes forward with a single-payer system, which is cost-effective, quality health care for all people, other states are going to say, we want to do the same, and it'll filter on up to Washington. Given the climate in Washington right now and the enormous power of the special interests, Tom, I don't know if you know this, but in the last 10 years, this is unbelievable, the pharmaceutical industry has spent over $900 million on lobbying to make sure that we pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. I mean, that's a power that is very difficult to deal with. So we're going to make the fight in Washington, of course. But I think at the state level, you're going to see some breakthroughs, whether it's campaign finance reform, election reform, or health care, that will spread around the country. I myself think that's an important vehicle for change.
Democracy changing from the bottom up.
That's
the
right.
The way it really should, ultimately. Brilliant. Thank you, Bernie, for that. Jerry in Asheville, North Carolina, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hello, gentlemen. I just cannot understand why there is not some procedure when American companies bid on procurement contracts with the U.S. government, why they're not waited to give some advantage to companies that employ Americans to a high percentage whose work is done in the United States and who pay their fair share of taxes.
Jerry, I think your point is exactly right, and some of us are working to accomplish exactly that goal. If companies want to move offshore to avoid paying taxes, if companies want to throw American workers out on the street and move abroad, I think they should get at the end of the line for government contracts as opposed to those companies that want to create jobs in this country and are proud to be American companies.
Yeah, well, this was the essence in 2003, what John Kerry tried to do, when Halliburton reincorporated their Kellogg Brown and Root division in the Cayman Islands so they wouldn't have to pay U.S. taxes, and they were getting all these no-bid contracts to rebuild Iraq, and they were hiring people from Bangladesh to do the work.
I mean, it is unbelievable. You know, I mean, Jerry's point is absolutely right. It is beyond belief. Unfortunately, I don't think we have a majority right now in Congress to stand up for that. Certainly you have a president who would veto any serious legislation, but there's no arguing with Jerry, and that is the direction that we've got to move. And we have got to work with those companies that want to grow jobs in the United States of America, and there are many of them. And we have to say to those companies who want to move abroad, who want to move to China, that's fine, but don't expect support from the taxpayers of this country.
Richard in Aberdeen, New Jersey, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, Tom, thank you. Senator Sanders, I'm still waiting for an answer to a question that was put to you, probably 2 weeks ago, as to why you haven't yet entered the thrown your hat into the ring for president. But that's not why I'm calling. My question is this: the mega embassy in Iraq. How on earth did that ever get approved? Who approved it? Where did the money come from? And do we intend to stay there forever?
Well, I certainly hope not only that we're not going to stay forever, I hope that we're going to be getting out of there as soon as we possibly can. And I think the embassy is a symbol of a lot that is wrong with our policy. It is a huge embassy. And I think it's it tells the people in the Middle East that we are we want to be an imperial power in that region, and we're here for all kinds of reasons which we should not be there for. But Richard, many of us, I just want you to know that, are doing all that we can to end this war, to bring our troops home as soon as possible, and to develop an effective and sensible policy to deal with a very serious issue of international terrorism. Clearly what we're doing in Iraq is not only not winning, it is making a bad situation even worse. So we need very fundamental changes in our policy toward the Middle East, toward that region, and I just want you to know that some of us are doing what we can to bring that about.
Do you expect that, we just have a few seconds before a break here, Bernie, do you expect that there's going to be a lot of activity around changing the policy in the direction in Iraq this fall?
Yes, well, more than this fall. I think you're going to see it within the next few weeks.
Within the next few weeks.
Yeah, the defense authorization bill is coming up. You'll see a lot of discussion about Iraq policy in that bill.
That'll be a great one. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders, his website, sanders.senate.gov, a great source of news and information, both about what Senator Sanders is doing, but also broadly about what's happening in America, the middle class, what's happening with legislative processes and policies. Sanders.senate.gov.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Well, you can't turn him into a company man. You can't turn him into a whore. And the boys upstairs just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much. And he won't play what they say to play. And he don't want to change what don't need to change. And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
Here he is right here.
What he wants to say.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov is website. Our toll-free number, 866-303-2270.
Tommy, if I could just butt in for a second and mention to Vermont listeners that this Sunday morning at 10 o'clock at Montpelier High School, we're going to be doing a town meeting on global warming with Bill McKibben. And, Tom, I think you know Bill is one of the best writers in this country.
He is.
In terms of global warming, a brilliant guy. It'll be a great meeting. So anyone from Vermont listening, we'd love to see you at 10 o'clock Sunday morning at Montpelier High School.
Good. Great. Thank you, Bernie. And always feel free to interrupt.
And if you want to fly in from California, that's okay, too. But
there you go.
Mostly from Vermonters.
Drop in and see Bernie. Andy in Union, speaking of California, Andy in Union Hills, California. You're listening on KSZL. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say thank you on behalf of all IBM employees, which, as luck would have it, I still am one, for all you've done ever since you were a congressman. But my question is, you know that IBM has retroactively taken away our pension. I was wondering if there was any way of writing a law that would retroactively force them to give it back.
Let me take a look at that. The battle that we had with IBM, which started right here in the state of Vermont, was that a lot of the workers there had received information that the pensions that were promised to them were going to be rescinded. And they were going to go into a cash balance payment scheme, which would have, in some cases, cut their pensions by 40% or 50%. And we were able to mount an effort to force IBM to change its mind. Andy, let me take a look at that situation, and we'll see what's going on.
I've got in the next hour, I will tell my favorite Bernie story, which was about when Louise and I had dinner with you the night that happened. Well, I'll tell it very quickly. We had an appointment to have dinner with you, and you rushed into the restaurant like, 5-10 minutes late, grabbed a waitress as we were sitting down. I mean, not in the wrong way, but you just grabbed this waitress and said, "Bring me something with chicken in it, fast!" and sat down and said, "I got to get out of here. There, IBM has just said that they're going to do away with the pensions. We're going to organize. We're getting a couple hundred people in the meeting. We're going to have a meeting in an hour and a half. I got to get over there. People are working." I had thought we were going to have this nice, quiet dinner, discuss this program.
How many people showed up at that meeting?
So I think it was 600, wasn't it?
Exactly right. 600 people showed up at St. Michael's College, and that was the beginning of a grassroots effort, in this case on the part of IBM employees, to reverse bad policy.
Yeah,
that just tells you again and again what happens when people are prepared to become active and stand up and fight for what they believe in. You can make change. In this case, we took on one of the most powerful corporations in the world, and you know what? We won.
Yeah, and it was amazing. It had happened just a few hours before, and you were just, you are the most energetic person I've ever met in my life. I'm in continual awe of you. I just have to say, Richard in San Diego, California, listening on KLSD. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Thanks, Tom, for taking my call, and Senator Sanders, it's a privilege and a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Richard.
I've followed your career for many years. I had a real quick question for you regarding the recent bankruptcy laws. I saw a moving documentary recently called Maxed Out about the predatory lending practice
yep.
lenders, and I would just want to see if there's any political will to do anything
yep.
about it.
A good question, Richard. Very important issue. I voted against that bankruptcy law when I was in the House. It comes down very heavily on working people. It was essentially written by our friends in the credit card industry who now charge us, in some cases, 25-28% interest rates. So to answer Richard's question is yes, that's an issue that definitely should be revisited, and I think you're going to see some action there.
Terry in Louisville, Colorado, on listening on KKZN. You're on the air with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator. Good morning, Tom. I have two suggestions that could dramatically lower the cost of solar electricity, but I think they would need the support of the federal government. So I thought I'd suggest them to you.
Sure.
The first one is the cost of the material, the purified silicon, is dramatically higher for people that make solar panels because there are only 2 or 3 factories in the world that produce them, and they're not in America, and they have long-term supply contracts with computer chip makers.
Right, right.
So if the federal government could see its way to take some of the Exxon Mobil coal subsidies and direct it to U.S. production of silicon, that would possibly lower the cost of the material by 30-50%. And then the other thing that could dramatically lower the cost of solar is the business model right now is put solar on individual house roofs, and then you have to spend about 25 to 30% of that cost on inverters to convert DC to AC, house after house after house. And then, of course, just installing those panels on a rooftop, there's a lot of time and labor involved because you're working on a roof,
right,
and you're drilling holes and you have to seal.
Terry, we only have about a minute left. Can you make this very short?
Well, Carrie has made two good. I think I know where he's coming from. And Carrie, they're both very good suggestions.
Excuse me.
I think solar has enormous potential. The problem right now is that it is very expensive. There are now being built in America and in existence in America major solar plants. Not just individual rooftops that are generating electricity, a lot of new technology being developed in that regard. There is no question in my mind that the federal government has got to invest big time in this technology, bring down the price, and see solar become one of the important developers of energy in this country.
Yeah, well said. And Jimmy Carter started it, and Reagan stopped it, and this is not rocket science. There's so much we can do. You can learn more about it over at sanders.senate.gov. Senator Bernie Sanders, thanks again for being with us this week.
Good to be with you, Tom. Take care.
It's always great talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be taking your calls. Anything Goes Friday, coming up right after the news at the top of the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio. The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
Well, the American Research Group just did a poll. The results are in. Do you think that the secret way that Dick Cheney himself pronounces his own name? Yes, it's a state secret. it's true. Dick Cheney pronounces his name Cheney, and is very, very happy that everybody else mispronounces it because it's another way to hide. Anyhow, do you think that Dick Cheney should be impeached? 76% of Democrats say yes. 17% of Republicans say yes. 51% of independents say yes, leading to a total of all Americans, 54% say yes, impeach Dick Cheney. When asked, should George W. Bush be impeached? 46% of voters said yes, including 69% of Democrats and 50% of independents. Republicans a little more wary of that. 17% wanted to impeach Cheney. Only 13% want to impeach Bush. So, interesting news of the day. And our crazy alert for the day. French President Sarkozy has fallen afoul of intellectuals and critics who see his passion for jogging as un-French, right-wing, and even a ploy to brainwash his fellow citizens. Boy, why didn't they come up with this when Bush was out there in the news every day jogging? The grumbling has now moved to television and the press. Liberation, the left-wing newspaper, says, is jogging right-wing? They write, Western civilization in its best sense was born with the promenade. Walking is a sensitive, spiritual act. Jogging is management of the body. The jogger says, I am in control. It has nothing to do with meditation. The article goes on to say, Mr. Sarkozy has rekindled, this from the Times Online, the Times of London, Mr. Sarkozy has rekindled a French suspicion that the habit of jogging is for self-centered individualists such as the Americans who popularized it. As Odile Baudrier, editor of VO2 magazine, a sports publication, said, jogging, of course, is about performance and individualism, values that are traditionally ascribed to the right. Patrick Mignon, a sports sociologist, noted that French intellectuals had always held sport in contempt, while totalitarian regimes cultivated physical fitness. Yeah, the French say you should walk, not run. I find this particularly interesting because I wrote a book. It was published early this year, or was it late last year? Anyhow, recently, in the last 6 months, the book came out called Walking Your Blues Away, about the psychological benefit. There's some reference to the physical benefits, but mostly it's the psychological benefits of walking as opposed to running. The Live Earth concert. ABC News reports that Al Gore will begin tomorrow's series of Live Earth concerts in Washington, D.C. at a surprise conference at the National Museum of the American Indian. Senator James Inhofe, the Republican from Oklahoma who believes in creation science and doesn't believe in global warming, has tried to block the event from happening in Washington, D.C., claiming it was a partisan event. This is really interesting. The good Republican senator from Oklahoma suggests that anybody who wants to save the world must be a Democratic partisan. Does that mean that those who want to destroy the world must be Republicans? Apparently. Apparently, Senator Inhofe thinks that any sort of defense of the natural environment is a partisan issue, which means, in his mind, the Republican Party does not stand with all life on Earth, which we're part of. I'm sorry, Mr. Inhofe, but we couldn't make it without everything else, just like we can't make it without each other. So, and finally, a very interesting story. This, I just want to share some of these news stories with you, and then we'll hop on the phones. I think, you know, and particularly some of the news that may not be at the top of, you know, the New York Times or your local newspaper. You'll recall last year the ACLU sued the National Security Agency, the NSA, over their warrantless surveillance program, saying that it violated First Amendment rights of free speech, their particular thing, and by the way, Fourth Amendment rights of privacy. And Judge Anna Diggs Taylor of the Eastern District of Michigan, federal judge, not, you know, in a scathing ruling, which we read at length on this program back 6 months ago or so when this happened, it was in January, said that that Bush had failed to, I'm paraphrasing now, I don't have it in front of me, but my recollection, I'm sure, is pretty accurate, had failed to uphold his duty as President of the United States to enforce the law, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that he had broken the law, and that he had failed to enforce the Constitution, which he takes an oath to do, by, you know, breaking the Constitution's First and Fourth Amendment protections of free speech and privacy. So now the Bush administration said, okay, well, you know, we don't like this outcome. We didn't like what this federal judge had to say, so we're going to appeal it to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, which they did. And Judge Alice Batchelder of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals has just ruled, and it's a very interesting ruling. At the surface, and this is probably all that you'll hear on the corporate news, on the corporate media, the infotainment media, in the infotainment press, on the surface, what she said was that the ACLU did not have standing. In other words, they legally couldn't sue the National Security Agency, and so the case was being thrown out. So the administration won on this appeal. Now, the ACLU has the option of appealing this loss to the Supreme Court. We'll see what they're going to do. We haven't heard from the ACLU on this yet. But what's particularly interesting about this, and one of the reasons why I think the ACLU should continue to pursue this, is that Batchelder, the judge who, by the way, was appointed by Bush Sr. to the bench, he was appointed by a good Republican president, she said that although she was not going to allow the case to stand because of this legal technicality, that the ACLU did not have standing, they didn't have a legal right to sue the NSA, she did say, and this I'm quoting now from, oh, I thought I was quoting from the, yeah, here it is. This is from her, what do you call it, her ruling. She says, without expressing an opinion concerning the analysis of the district court, I would affirm its judgment because I conclude that the TSP, this terrorist surveillance program, violates FISA, for the Foreign Intelligence Services Act, and Title III, and that the president does not have the inherent authority to act in disregard of those statutes. She says this is not to say that the plaintiff's other cause of action lack merit. In other words, she's saying, you know, the ACLU is right. The president broke the law. She says this is not to say, or she agrees with the previous judge, Judge Anna Dix Taylor. She says this is not to say that the plaintiff's other causes of action lack merit, but simply that this case can and therefore should be decided on the narrowest grounds possible. The closest question in this case, in my opinion, is whether the plaintiffs have the standing to sue. Once past that hurdle, however, the rest gets progressively easier. Well, she's not going to let it pass that hurdle. She says that they don't have the right to sue. So now the case becomes about whether the ACLU or anybody else has the right to sue the NSA. She wraps this up. She says, finally, when faced with the clear wording of FISA in Title III, that these statutes provide the exclusive means for the government to engage in electronic surveillance within the United States for foreign intelligence purposes, the conclusion becomes inescapable that the TSP, this is George Bush's terrorist surveillance program, was unlawful. I would, therefore, affirm the judgment of the district court. So the judge who just ruled in this case, on its surface, on behalf of the government, what is going to, in all probability, in our infotainment news, our so-called news industry, is probably going to simply be portrayed as a victory, if it's even discussed, frankly, as a victory for the president. Actually, in her ruling, says, yeah, Bush broke the law. It's pretty obvious to me. I agree with the previous judge. It's just that the group that brought this case, the ACLU, doesn't have the right to sue the NSA about this issue. And she doesn't lay out who would or how it should be done. That's not her job. But I find it just absolutely fascinating. There's a good analysis over at tpmmuckraker.com, by the way, and others, of course, all over the blogosphere. So, fascinating. So those are the big events of the day in my mind. We'll get to yours right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
Anything goes. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Head over to airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. Just go to airamerica.com and click on our page. Click on my name, I think it is. It'll get you there. And you'll see the link to our live chat room. You'll see a link to our blog. There's the blog on airamerica.com. There's also our message board over at tomhartman.org. There's just all kind. Yeah, there's a link to the articles on democracy that I've written, and I've got to get my most recent article for Common Dreams up there right away. Maybe I can do that during the next break. I don't know. We'll see. But anyhow, there's all kinds of cool resources there. And David will be picking out his favorite blog from the blogging over at the Tom Hartman page of airamerica.com today, and we'll be mailing out a copy, a signed autograph copy, personalized, of my newest book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, to whoever David in his own whimsical fashion decides is his favorite post of the day. And please don't offer to marry him or have his baby or send him money or anything like that, because that won't work. Is it Jolie in San Francisco?
Yes, that's me.
Hello, Jolie.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to let you know and get it out something that I found out yesterday. I was having lunch with a girlfriend who's 26 and she's an elementary teacher, and she said she received a statement from Social Security that showed her earnings and how much she had put in, and that it also said that when she retired she would not be able to receive any money because there would not be any money to receive.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So, yeah, I've gotten these letters where they say this is how much you've put in, but now they're adding a little political message to this?
To the younger people. I'm in my 50s, so I'm much older, but I guess to the 20-somethings, maybe? I don't know. This is the first I've heard of it.
That's amazing. Well, would you ask her if she would be willing to to send a copy of that letter to me, or to fax it, or to email it, or, you know, copy it and email it or whatever?
Okay.
My contact
information.
Thank you. My contact information is over on our website at tomhartman.com. It just says contact. Click that page, and it's all there. You know, my email address and our the address to which you can mail things. I'd love to see that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks,
I'll do
Jody.
It.
Thank you. And I will publicize it, and I'll get to the bottom of it. We'll find out what this is all about. Charlie in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Charlie, what's up?
Well, I've been thinking since the 4th of July when you read the Declaration of Independence, this long train of abuses and usurpations, the repeated injuries. And I was looking through the Declaration of Independence, and you see things like the king made judges dependent upon his will alone, that they deprived people of the right to trial by jury. And then in the fourth paragraph from the bottom, it says, he has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless, and this capitalized, Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. And just prior to that, it talks about transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, lying. So here's a war brought on by lies. And just interesting, you know, when they said all men are created equal, it never occurred to them that their slaves counted or that women should be included.
Actually, it did. There was a large debate about those issues, and women, the rights of women, a prohibition on the rights of women was not written into the Constitution.
Right.
The Constitution is sexless. The word male does not appear in the Constitution until 1873.
The idea of the merciless Indian savages, that's how I'd say a large part of our population today sees terrorists or Arabs or Muslims, that they have no rule of warfare, that undistinguished.
Well, the British were basically hiring certain Indian tribes as mercenaries. I mean, they had a fairly large mercenary army, and they were being used against the colonists in some cases. And,
sure,
and that's what they're talking about. And just like we have a large mercenary army in Iraq right now.
Absolutely. But the seeds of growth are there to me. It seems that the way we saw the Indians as just these mindless, bloody savages, and then within 100 years, you saw people starting to talk about rights for them and recognizing their grievances. And here we are, you know, just kill the enemy, them. And what really got me, on the 4th of July itself, Bush shows up to give a speech to the Air National Guard, exhorting them, these are troops who've already had extended tours of duty, who've been, you know, brought back through stop loss. And here's a gentleman who, when he had his chance in the Air National Guard, was offered a chance to serve overseas during a war, and he declined to go to Vietnam. But he never fails to use the troops as a prop for, you know, these speeches.
He declined to even show up for over a year, which is called desertion. I mean, if you're AWOL for more than 30 days, you're a deserter. He was AWOL for over 11 months.
You got it, Tom. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're welcome. It's really and truly mind-boggling. Thanks, Charlie. Interesting. Richard in San Diego. Hey, Richard, got about a half a minute here.
Okay, just want to let you know, Tom, I was listening to your show yesterday, all the people calling up after they saw Sicko.
Mm-hmm.
MoveOn.org's got a campaign going. There's a toll-free number you can call, 1-866-459-6050. They will connect you with the presidential candidate of your choice, and you can request that they not take any campaign money from any corporate PACs, lobbyists, executives of HMOs, big health insurers, and drug companies. And you can also go to www.moveon.org/sticko. So people are doing something.
Yeah, okay, so you can check it out at moveon.org. And by the way, you already have Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards not taking any PAC money from anybody. So, you know, there's a few of them who are out ahead of that curve. Richard, thank you very much for the call and for the heads up. I've still been, you know, David and I spent some time on this. We've still been looking around for what people can do. The AFL-CIO actually has some good information and stuff you can print out and take to the theater with you and pass it out. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
So happy when they passed NAFTA. We moved our factories just across the Florida. We used to pay good wages, now we don't have to. Maquiladora. We'll pay you $50 for a 100-hour week. We'll bribe the inspectors so they can ignore you. You can't use the toilet and you're not allowed to speak. Maquiladora. The taxes in the States were sort of steep. The worker safety laws can really bore you. Now we're turning out our products on the cheap at the Maquiladora.
Ah, ain't it wonderful? You know, that was the basis of Michael Moore's first movie, Roger and Me, was the movement of the, I believe it was five General Motors factories from Flint, Michigan, down to Mexico, the Maquiladora. That's amazing. So anyway, and by the way, welcome back to listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, supporting our sponsors on our local stations in particular, and also on our national, you know, on this national program, sponsors like Sacred Grounds Coffee, sacredgroundscoffee.com, Saving the Planet One Cup at a Time, Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods at 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, The Organic Wine Company, imported organic wine from France, 1-888-ECO-WINE, E-C-O-W-I-N-E, and Purina One Natural Blends, 1-866-380-MEOW. So, lots of good stuff out there. Gary in Evergreen, Colorado. Gary, you had a point you wanted to make about Social Security?
Hi, Tom. Your caller before the break, the lady from San Francisco that said her friend had got a statement from the Social Security Administration.
Right.
My wife has been a public school teacher for over 20 years in two different states. And to the best of my knowledge, public school teachers, now this lady's friend might have been a private school teacher, I don't know, but public school teachers don't contribute to Social Security, and they don't benefit from Social Security. My wife gets a statement every year from the Social Security Administration. It lists what she has contributed from her non-teaching jobs, which she has held during the summertime, but it also says every year that she's not going to get any benefits because she's a school teacher. The bulk of her income has come from school teaching, and teachers don't contribute to or participate in Social Security. So
Because there's a national teachers union that has a pension program, and that there's the weird exception in the Social Security law, which includes teachers and a couple of other professions. I don't know the details of this, that said that they could opt out of the Social Security program because they had this pension program.
I believe you're correct, and I don't know whether it's in every state of the union. But like I said, my wife taught in Illinois and in Colorado, and both have their own state.
I think it's a federal exemption, and I'm really, frankly, very ambivalent about anybody being able to opt out of the Social Security system. You know, it's something that I know some groups of people were able to do, and like I said, I'm ambivalent about it. But you know, thanks for that clarification, Gary. It may be that. Well, we'll find out if we get a copy of the letter that the woman was calling about. But it may be that that's what it was about. Interesting, good point. Elizabeth in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you for listening on KKZN. What's up?
Also regarding the Social Security lady, I'm 25, and I also received those letters. I'm sorry?
Are you a teacher?
I am not a teacher, but I'm okay. Essentially the same pay grade. I'm a legal assistant.
Uh-huh.
But I've been working pretty much since I was 15, and it lists every year that you've worked and how much you've contributed. And at this point, I'll be getting 74 cents for every dollar that I put into the system. And the woman in San Francisco had said that the teacher would be getting nothing. And I thought it was interesting that even though I'm not a teacher, you know, even if they do get to opt out, I still won't be getting back everything that I'm putting in and every year.
Well, actually, you might even get $2 or $3 for every dollar you put into the system, depending on how long you live, because Social Security doesn't. I said you could get as much as $2 or $3 for every dollar you put in, depending on how long you live, because Social Security doesn't stop paying you when it has paid out the last dollar that you paid in. It's not a savings account. It's an insurance policy, and so it pays as long as you're alive. There are, you know, people who live long get a whole lot more out of Social Security than they put into it, and people who don't live particularly long get a whole lot less than they put into Social Security. That's how insurance programs work.
Right. The letter that I get has told me that, like, you know, people that are just now starting to pay into the system, like the 18 and 19-year-old kids, will only mm-hmm. be getting, there will only be enough money in the system to give them 48 cents. For every dollar that they put in now by the time they're, because they keep spending out of the Social Security fund. And so it's just, there's not going to be a lot.
Do you have that letter, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I still have it at home. I get one every year. I have the one from last year too. And it's like, there's a decreasing
would you mind taking a black marker and marking out any private information that you wouldn't want us to have and faxing it to us?
Yeah, if you you provide me with the right number to send it to.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, and Lauren Kirshner, who answers our phones there and runs the you know the call central there at, in New York at Air America, will give you the fax number for Air America's offices, and just please write on the document itself, just write, please deliver to Lauren Kirshner for the Tom Hartman program. You know, write that on there so that, well, Lauren will tell you how to do it, okay? So hang on, Elizabeth. I'm going to put you on hold here, and Lauren will talk to you. I'd love to see the copy of these letters that these younger people are getting who are paying into it. It's pretty mind-boggling. Robo in Arcadia, California. Hey, Robo.
Yeah. How's it going?
I'm fine, but I'll get better. What's up?
I was just calling to share a situation that is brewing here. I go to Humboldt State University in Northern California, and there's 23 California State Universities, and they're all funded on a certain model that depends on enrollment growth.
Right.
As well as 15 units in full-time enrollment. And the administration here, I can't even get their job descriptions. It's all confidential. I can get nothing from the chancellor of the system. They're raising student fees. Our education is pretty unaffordable. Like, the mission of the CSU system is high-quality, affordable education. They've cut half of our GEs. They continue to fire lecturers, and we're in a rural area. I mean, that's pretty devastating. I mean, give your life to a school to try and educate people, and they give you the boot.
Oh, I remember when the University of California education system was the pride of the country. It was free. People from all over the United States moved to California just to establish residency so they could go to college there and get a free, brilliant education. Being a teacher in the University of California education system was a major status symbol. And Ronald Reagan began taking that thing apart aggressively when he became governor. And, you know, it's still an excellent system, but as you said, there are some problems, and a lot of it tracks back to this philosophy that Reagan brought with him when he came into office. You know, Reagan's famous notion that government, including government that you know involves things like schools, is a bad thing.
I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
And therefore, education, a form of help. Yes, it will equalize economic opportunity for people. Yes, it's an investment in our future. But see, Reagan didn't think of, you know, and cons in general. They don't think about investments. They think about expenses. They think about, is this going to, you know, be more taxes on the wealthy? Oh, my God. Then we can't have it. Hey, the really simple solution to 95% of the problems that we're facing right now in the United States is to go back to the exact same tax system we had under the Republican president, Dwight Eisenhower. But that's a whole rant for another day. We'll continue with your phone calls here. Chris in Michigan. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Tom, you're great. I'm so glad I can get you now. I was calling in response to seeing Sicko.
Mm-hmm.
I work in the medical field. So I cannot encourage people enough to see it. It's outstanding. But I also feel like I have to say that Michael Moore has only scratched the surface.
Yeah. Well, he only had 90 minutes. I mean, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. And one of the big issues and why I didn't give my last name is because, you know, you probably know about HIPAA. And there were other people when that ruling went in, who felt like I did, that this was nothing more than a way to shut medical workers up.
No, hang on just a second. Explain to our listeners about HIPAA, please.
And I can't remember what the HIPAA stands for now, but it's a new rule that covers the medical field, covers all medical workers, that you may not, and medical workers already don't discuss people's private medical records or anything like that, but you may not discuss anything you see, hear, or do in the course of your job. And this includes even, say, you're working in a hospital and you see the child or the parent of a friend come into the system. You cannot call them and inquire or warn them or anything like that. You could lose your job.
So HIPAA, because I have to admit, I'm not all that familiar with it. HIPAA was a federal law, was it, that was passed that was presumably to protect confidentiality, but
right.
in fact what it's doing is it's shutting down whistleblowers?
I firmly believe that. When you call into the hospital, if you have a friend in the hospital and you call in to inquire about them, what room they're in, or something, they will tell you they can't tell you anything.
Yeah.
So
well, there is some... You know, some reasonable basis for protecting confidentiality, but
right.
if it extends to stopping whistleblowing activities, then we've got a problem. And
right.
we know that the Bush administration has just been crushing whistleblowers.
Right.
And Chris, thanks a lot for the heads up on that. I'll have to look into that a little more. And if one of our listeners is quite familiar with that situation, feel free to give us a shout, because it's, you know, I can't keep on top of everything. It's one of the things that seems to have slid by me. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room, where I'm going to go hang out for just a minute right now.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And where that foghorn blows, I will be coming home. Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I wanna hear you ready. I don't have to fear that I wanna rock your gypsy soul. Just like way back in the days of old. Yeah, magnificently we will fold until the misty.
Into the mystic. You tell him, Van Morrison. Welcome back. The Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act is what HIPAA is. And a tip of the hat to the folks in the chat room who came up with links and information and all kinds of stuff. I mean, instantly they were on it and had it. And there's a whole variety of problems with HIPAA that have the Wikipedia entry actually is fairly comprehensive. And it says the effect on clinical research and clinical care, the enactment of the privacy and security rules have caused major changes in the way physicians and medical centers operate. The complex legalities and potential stiff penalties associated with HIPAA, as well as increase in paperwork and cost of implementation, were causes of concern among physicians and medical centers. Its effect on research. HIPAA restrictions on researchers have affected their ability to perform retrospective chart-based research, et cetera, et cetera. Effects on clinical care, cost of implementation. So, you know, it looks like, without reading the law, it looks like it may be an example of good intentions run bad. Or it may be, I mean, this was passed during a Republican legislature. It may just be another... You know, bad intentions gone bad. Ellen Ratner is with us. She's with the Talk Radio News Service. She runs the Talk Radio News Service at talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen.
Bad news. There was a 2-1 decision, and it was the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals today, which encompasses Detroit. And essentially, this was an ACLU suit brought by the ACLU on the behalf of journalists and attorneys and nonprofit organizations. And they said essentially that unchecked surveillance programs of the government was disrupting their ability to communicate effectively with their sources and clients. It was essentially overturned. The lower court, if you recall, I think there was a female judge who on
Judge
the lower-
Anna Diggs Taylor.
That's right. And thank you. And essentially, they are now deciding, the ACLU is deciding whether to push this further to the Supreme Court. But they're also saying that, of course, this now makes the oversight and the job of Senator Leahy, et cetera, who actually also issued a view today on this decision, much more important. And Senator Leahy said there was a dark cloud over the White House that warrantless wiretapping and a full response to his committee on these subpoenas would be a good start to cleaning
yeah.
the air.
I agree. And now, one of the interesting things about this case was that this 2-3 decision in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, the basis on which they threw this thing out, that, you know, that the government won and the ACLU lost, was not whether or not the Bush administration was breaking the law, Title III and the FISA Act, with their so-called terrorist surveillance program, their illegal warrantless wiretapping. In fact, it was because they said that the ACLU didn't have legal standing to sue the NSA. And I thought, there's just a couple of sentences here I'll share with you from Judge Alice Batchelder of the Sixth Circuit Court. She's one of the judges who voted to say, no, this thing can't go forward. In other words, voted in favor of the administration. She said, I would affirm its judgment. That is the previous court, Judge Anna Diggs Taylor. She says, I would affirm its judgment because I conclude that the terrorist surveillance program violates the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and Title III, and that the president does not have the inherent authority to act in disregard of those statutes. This is not to say that the plaintiff's other causes of action lack merit, but simply that this case can and therefore should be decided on the narrowest grounds possible. The closest question in this case, in my opinion, is whether the plaintiffs have the standing to sue. Once past that hurdle, however, the rest gets progressively easier. So she's basically saying that she agrees with Judge Anna Diggs Taylor that what Bush did and what the Bush administration did, Gonzalez and all these other guys, was a crime. It was unconstitutional. It was illegal.
As I understand, that the standings of the parties has not been clarified.
That's right. And so this is really a technicality, not, you know, it's the Bush administration. And therefore, if the ACLU decides to take this to the Supreme Court, the question in my mind, and not being an attorney, I don't know the answer to this. If they take this to the Supreme Court, would the Supreme Court be ruling on whether or not there was standing? Or would the Supreme Court be ruling on whether or not the Bush administration broke the law? I suspect the former, not the latter, because
that's
the most recent decision.
Well, the question is, would they even take the case if they felt that it didn't have standing, or would they just vote against
right.
it? You need four votes to advance it.
Right. The first time. Yeah.
Right.
And then if those four votes get turned down, it takes five. Yeah. Good point. Okay. But that's... You know, I thought that was interesting, that even the judge who said, no, we're not going to go along with this, said Bush broke the law.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll see where this gets us. Also, Tony Fredo today, or Fratto, actually, is more how he pronounces his name. He did a gaggle today. There was no briefing as the president took off very early to go to Camp David for his birthday. But essentially, he was given a lot of grief about the Domenici situation on Iraq, and he said Domenici was a thoughtful senator. He said that they wanted to increase Iraqi-trained troops. There was no open-ended commitments. He felt, in terms of the surge issue, that Congress should be patient enough, and that they were not—they're not in a place at this point to call the surge a success. No kidding. He also said that General Petraeus was going to come mid next week or next week for a status report. He said we were not going to see the absence of corruption down to zero in Iraq. We weren't going to see the absence of acrimony, but he felt that they would hopefully get to a state to allow the necessary blanket of 159,000 American troops to go away. Meanwhile, this is the same time the White House is saying one thing, you know, let's be reasonable, let's look at this. No, it's not a success necessarily. General Rick Lynch at the Pentagon news conference today, it was a TV news conference, or, you know, a televised news conference essentially, Merak said the violence would escalate if we left. So, you know, you got one hand saying one thing and the other hand saying, you know, one hand saying be reasonable and the other one saying, oh, no, no, no.
Yeah, and then on the third hand, you've got Odom, who was the NSA director under Reagan, saying that they should cut the funding, they should force Bush to pull the troops out, and if he doesn't, they should impeach him.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty amazing. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com, 57 minutes past.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
Welcome back to our program. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. There should be no hesitation to attack the Naders, the Marcuses, and others who openly seek destruction of the free enterprise system. This is from Justice Lewis Powell's the Powell memo. I've been during the break sitting here marking this thing up. We're going to do an entire show on this. This is amazing. The blueprint for the destruction, essentially the destruction of the left, in the United States. Or the really, it's actually, let me rephrase that. It's the blueprint for the takeover by the Reich in the United States. It's really, you know, quite extraordinary. Brian in Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom? I want to kind of hang on. You had a caller earlier about what can we do and how things are changing. And we've heard from a student who's having a problem. We've heard from a nurse, and we've heard from our citizens. And I'm hoping that I can, that string that he tossed out the window that I grab hold of, that I can turn into a yarn and turn into a rope. We can pull back, and we can do something like these judges who aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. We like that ruling today. If you live in your district, write him a letter. And relative to the congressperson, stand out in front of his office. I do everything I possibly can, but the most powerful thing I've ever seen, Tom, is when you're standing in a protest to, with next to people that don't look like you. They're white, they're black, they're Latin, they're fat, they're skinny, they're in wheelchairs. And it's the most powerful thing to stand next to your brother and tell them, get out of our White House. We don't like your rules. And it's powerful.
Yeah. And there's been a series of sit-ins and stand-ins here at the office of Republican Senator Gordon Smith here in Portland,
right,
for example. And when he called the police and had these people arrested, it
right.
made big news. And they don't do that so often anymore.
It wasn't enough. I mean,
they don't call the police so often anymore.
It has to be enough. I want to tell you one other thing before I go. You know, I want to remind people, Martin Luther King told us this. This country will, this nation will rise up to live its to the meaning of its creed. And we hold those things true, just like self-evident, like he said. It's important for us in order because we have a future. And when we have young people who are looking at their adults and not doing it, who are confused, we need to help those kids. Yeah. We can do this. And when I see little kids out there in the protest and they're like 8 years old, I go, you fight, little man, you fight. Because it's important. You have told us. You have spoke to us, and we have heard enough. We know enough. Let's take it to the streets and take it to them.
I mean, with
the bottom of my soul, because I hope with all my dreams that the military comes and be the first ones there with us, the ones who went to Iraq. Let them lead us, and then that way the souls who have passed. They won't die in vain because they're fighting back for them.
Certainly happened in Vietnam, and it is happening now. There is a strong movement of veterans of the Iraq and Afghan wars. Yeah. No, good point, Brian, and thank you very much for making it. Yeah, thank you. I got it. And also, you invoked the name of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Let's not forget also that he was one of the most articulate and outspoken voices for peace of his generation. He continually talked about peace and the fundamental immorality of war. And look at all the wars that we've been in. Every single administration since World War II has been involved in some way, in some war, someplace, somehow, you know, dropping bombs on people. And we always come up with some nice little rationalization for it. And it really, Dennis Kucinich's idea of a Department of Peace, I think, is a great idea. Although obviously that's not going to be the solution to the problem. It's a step in the right direction. Let's have somebody advocating for peace at every cabinet meeting in the White House. Cheryl in Bonnie Lake, Washington, listening on Talk 1090 KPTK. Hey, Cheryl.
Good morning, Tom. Hey, thanks for taking my call. I tell you, this has related to sicko. Has to do with the pharmaceutical companies. You know, they're lobbying now with candidates and. They want to now put even, you know, more control, not just on they're making up drugs now and conditions so they can even market more drugs. And never before have we seen, advertisements and things for new conditions. But now they want to put restrictions on even natural supplements. I know that you are about wellness and taking care of your body and whatnot. And have you ever heard of the fruit called mangosteen? It comes out of the Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I have. And the thing that made me suspicious of it was when it was being sold in a multi-level marketing scheme. I just out of principle refuse to buy anything that comes through MLM systems. But you're right. It's full of antioxidants and other cool stuff. but, you know, it's true of pomegranate juice and a lot of other fruits as well. But the larger point that you're making is that the FDA has been for a long time, and oddly, Henry Waxman is one of the guys who supports this, who, you know, he's my hero in every other regard except for this, has been trying to get control of natural supplements and put limits on vitamins and minerals and herbs, and in particular on herbs. And that concerns me, frankly, a lot. It's on the other hand, I'll tell you, there's a couple of herbs that I take on a real regular basis because I think that they're just good for me. And I do notice that sometimes the herbs that I get are really fresh and, you know, you can smell them. You break open the capsules and you can smell the herbs in there and, you know, you're getting something that's got some potency. And sometimes they look old and stale and gray. So it would be nice if the industry did some more aggressive self-policing, frankly.
There's a point to standards, but, you know, there's something called a xanthone that exists naturally, a couple of different things like the mangosteen. And, and now the pharmaceuticals are jumping on trying to, produce this. And so, you know, if they can get their hands on some of these things, like, you know, tamoxifen, a great drug. I'm a breast cancer survivor, and to have taken this was wonderful. And to have allopathic medicine is great when used sensibly. But,
do you know where tamoxifen came from?
Well, yeah, it's a tree. It's a
Pacific yew tree.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, and when we can get things through our food naturally, you know, we should do that. And why throw in your book about walking for wellness and for mental health, you know, if we can do that without throwing, psychotropic drugs at people, you know, when they should be just simply taking care of themselves, I mean, that would be first line, you know, and I would, you know, cringe to think of how many people are on psychotropic.
Yeah, it's about 10% of the U.S. population right now is taking some kind of some type of prescription drug that alters consciousness, which is a really startling number, and it's even higher among in some large cities among school kids, which is a whole other discussion. But the point is that there have been a series of attempts by the FDA to control and regulate natural substances, and frankly, I agree with you, Cheryl. I don't think it should be happening. In fact, I would go so far as to say, anything that you can grow in your backyard should not be the province of the federal government. Period. And I would put into that category. I mean, now when you get down to refining things and reselling things, then it's a different thing. Now you're making a drug out of something that you grew in your backyard. But if you're just going to grow it and make tea out of it or eat it or something like that, whether it's poppies or whether it's pot or whatever, I don't think it should be regulated. And it's just, you know, I just, it's a, these are, there, we evolved with plants. And we have a long history of evolving with plants. So anyway, Bob in Clifton, Tennessee. Bob, what's up?
Hello. You often have guests on from the right wing. Back in June 11th, you had someone speak about stem cell research.
Yeah.
And I would like, when you talk to these religious regressives about abortion or stem cell research, and they talk about when life begins, I wish you would point out to them their contradiction. The Bible doesn't mention abortion, but it does say when life begins. Genesis 2:7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being.
Right, and it's not the only place in the Bible. There's at least a half a dozen of them in there where it says that life begins when you take your first breath. I still think that there are many of us who think that a viable fetus is, you know, should be considered different from, you know, six cells or eight cells that are just dividing at the very beginning. And that brings us back to the debate about when does life begin. But you know, yeah, Bob, if I want to make a religious argument with these guys, that's not that difficult to do. But you know, why parse religion when we can, you know, discuss science and be more practical about it, frankly? 16 minutes past. Your point is well taken, though. 16 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
I'm the designer.
cuckoo, cuckoo, Baghdad City, policemen sitting pretty little targets in a row. See how they die when shrapnel flies, see mothers cry. I'm lying.
This is George's song.
Yellowcake uranium. Imaginary WMDs. They classify them facts, expose them, secret agents, taxes before the wealthy leave and all the poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider, cuckoo-choo.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, right. Thank you very much. 22 minutes past the hour. A number of people have sent us the copies of their Social Security letters, and so you can stop right now if you were planning on doing it. Here's what I find fascinating. I have three of them here, and one is from... I'm not going to name the people, but, you know, they included enough of the information that I can see, you know, how long they've been working. And one is from a person who, yeah, interesting. One is from a person who has been working for, it looks like at least 25, maybe 30 years. So, you know, somebody who would be more like in the boomer cohort. And it says, and that one says, Social Security is a compact between generations. For decades, America has kept the promise of security for its workers and their families. Now, however, the Social Security system is facing serious financial problems, and action is needed soon to make sure the system will be sound when today's younger workers are ready for retirement. In 2017, we will begin paying more benefits than we collect in taxes. Without changes, by 2041, the Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted, and there will be enough money to pay only about 75 cents of each dollar of scheduled benefits. We need to resolve these issues soon to make sure Social Security continues to provide a foundation of protection for future generations. That's what it says on the front page. First of all, the system was designed for the Social Security Trust Fund to be exhausted by 2041, because it was designed for the boomers to pay for their own retirement. The baby boom generation, this boggles my mind that the average American doesn't realize this. The baby boom generation, the people born between the late 1940s and the early 1960s, that generation is the only generation. It's the first generation, and it will be the last generation, to both pay for the retirement of their parents through Social Security and also to save up them for themselves. Reagan doubled the Social Security taxes in 1982, doubled them, so that people from 1982 till right now, and presumably whenever they decide to change it, are paying not only into the current system to pay for the retirement of their parents, like it was from its founding in 1936 up until 1981. Up until that point, all the working people were paying into Social Security, and all of that money, there was no trust fund. 100% of the money that went in went out every year, and it went out to pay for the retirement of the people. And that's how the tax was figured. It was calculated based on what it was needed. So then they said, okay, now coming down the road in 2020, 2030, 2040, there's going to be these boomers retiring. And there's, you know, at 6% tax rate, it's not going to be enough. So they doubled the tax rate. So the boomers put money into a savings account called the Social Security Trust Fund. They not only paid for their parents' retirement, but they also put money into a savings account for their own retirement. That savings account is supposed to go away when all the boomers die, because they were the python going through the snake. The rabbit going through the python. You get the metaphor. Now, what's particularly interesting is that what I read you about that, which says, you know, hey, we've got a problem, and 75 cents on the dollar, and here's one person sent me, your estimated benefits are based on current law. Congress has made changes in the law in the past and could do so at any time. The law governing benefits may change because by 2040, the payroll taxes collected will be enough to pay only 74% of scheduled benefits. And this is, they say, right by the amount of money you're going to get. So it's like an implied threat. But here's one that comes from a younger worker. This is another Social Security Statement of Benefit. It starts out with the same language. Social Security is a compact between generations for more than 70 years. America has kept the promise of security with its workers and families, but now the Social Security system is facing serious problems, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, today there are 37 million Americans age 65 or older. Now, it doesn't say that in the one that goes to the older people, just to the younger people. Their Social Security retirement benefits are funded by today's workers and their employers who jointly pay Social Security taxes. What it's not saying is that they also it's also funded by their own savings, their own payments that they previously made, just as the money paid into Social Security was used to pay benefits to those who retired before them. No, not true. It's a different system than it was before Reagan. Unless action is taken soon to strengthen Social Security, in just 10 years, we will begin paying more in benefits than we collect in taxes. Yes, that's how it was designed. That's why there's a Social Security Trust Fund. Without changes, they go on to say, by 2040, the Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted. Well, that's how it was designed. By then, the number of Americans 65 or older is expected to have doubled. That's why you have the trust fund. There won't be enough younger people working to pay all the benefits. This is propaganda. The Social Security Administration is sending out propaganda to people. This is incredible. It's incredible. Thank you for sharing your letters with me. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your phone calls.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Mark writes in, he says, Louise and Tom, teachers do, in fact, pay into Social Security. In California, we pay into STRS as well, the state teachers' retirement system. There's an insidious aspect to this issue, however. I have long since earned my requisite 40 quarters of Social Security credit through my lifetime of work as a professional musician, but when I retire, I will receive only about 30% of what my actual Social Security benefit would be. The federal government regards one's participation in Social Security and any other public pension plan to be double-dipping. The IRS has a nonsensical, almost cruel name for this restriction. They call it the windfall elimination provision. So much for the Reagan admonition that we are to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, as far as I'm concerned. Mark writes, this is un-American. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Ron went in Renton, Washington. Hey, Ron.
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to talk to Bernie when he was on earlier. I just watched a DVD on Orwell, Rolls in His Grave. And basically what it's all about is the money the media spend on lobbyists, and like there's over 300 lobbyists just from the media to be able to influence our Congress and our senators and everything. And the DVD is available on Amazon, and I just thought maybe a lot of your listeners would like to see it, because it is really a real eye opener.
Yeah. What we have to realize is that prior to 1987, the media was considered from the founding of this country, because the media was written into the Constitution. The First Amendment says the press is the only industry, the only business that is specifically mentioned in the Constitution of the United States. From the founding of this country until 1987, when Reagan took out the Fairness Doctrine, and then again in 1996 when Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, from the founding of this country until those two events, the press was considered unique. It was special rules, essentially, particularly those parts of the press that used public subsidies of, for example, the public airwaves, not subsidy, but the public commons, or that used the commons of the post office. Newspaper delivery, special fourth class rate was subsidized. Newsprint was subsidized up until the Civil War, things like that. And, you know, that's all changed now, and now it's just another business. And so the rules that apply to business apply to the press, and those rules have been made so lax that, you know, we're being wiped. You know, small businesses are wiped out by huge monopolies like Walmart, and small media is being wiped up by large media monopolies as well, and the news has become infotainment and all that kind of stuff. I think the simple solution is to start applying the Sherman Act again. Is to go back and say, you know, I, this has nothing to do with the Fairness Doctrine. This has everything to do with monopolies. Is to just start saying particularly with regard to media, but frankly with regard to everything from, you know, retailing to manufacturing, right across the board. It's time to go back to the idea that monopolies in commerce are not healthy things. They're not healthy things for democracy. It's why when Jefferson proposed the Bill of Rights be amended to the Constitution, one of the 10 that he proposed was a ban on monopolies in commerce. And that one didn't make it. But because it was already in every single state legislature.
Yeah, basically what they're saying now is it's just fascism. People, you know, if you can encourage people to get this DVD, it would
Orwell rolls over in his grave. I've heard of it, and I've got to track it down and watch it. Thanks for bringing the topic up, Ron. Ian in San Francisco. Hey, Ian, listening in the Quake.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, listen, I just wanted to put a pitch in for people throughout the country to take a look at our Senate Bill 840 that we have here in California. It passed both the House, the Assembly and the Senate last year here in California, and was vetoed by the governor. What it would do is it's called the California Universal Health Care Act, and it would be a single-payer system that does away with the insurance companies, takes the money from Medicaid and Medicare, combines that with other public programs in the state, and also has institutes a payroll tax on both employees and employers, an amount, though, that would be less than what people are paying in premiums now, and everyone would get covered. And they would get mental health coverage, they get prescription drugs, they get the full panoply of care that we can provide if we just get...
And this was passed by a majority of your legislators, and it was vetoed by your Republican Governor Schwarzenegger.
And this year it has passed the state Senate, and it has just recently passed the Assembly Health Committee and is moving on to the Assembly floor. It'll very likely pass in the Assembly and very likely, again, will be vetoed by the governor. But it is on its way eventually. It's going to happen. You know, we just got to get a different governor.
Well, keep me up to date on this. And when it is passed, let me know. And in fact, perhaps we can get, one of the legislators who put the thing together on this program.
And if people want to know more, Tom, if they want to know more now, just go to www.singlepayernow.net.
Okay, singlepayernow.net. That's for the California initiative?
That's right. And also, if they want to just call somebody on it, just call Don Beckler, who's heading up this effort, at San Francisco phone number 415-695.
Ian, I got to stop you there. I'm, not knowing Don, I'm not going to let you put somebody else's phone number on the air. I'm, just if it was your own phone number, you could make that decision. But it's just, I'm very wary of doing that. Barbara in Long Beach, New York. Hey, Barbara.
Hi. Hey, listen, Air America and then your show in particular this week have provoked a lot of thought and action. And I just wanted to tell you that after this discussion of the survey that posed the question, how patriotic are you? You know, I got a little introspective, and I have signed up for an activity this particular week. But on July 4th, I went out to the boardwalk, and I set up an American flag, and I just read out loud the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence.
That's a good one.
So
I
wanted to hear the words, and I've got to study it and learn it. Next year, maybe I'll get more people to do it. But, at some point, it really helps to look at the beginnings.
I remember back in the 60s, there was a famous, I don't know if it was a news study or if it was a university study. I don't remember who did it. But they went out on college campuses and asked people, or they went out on the streets, and they asked people if they would sign a copy of the Declaration of Independence, only they didn't know it was the Declaration of Independence. They simply said, would you sign this petition? And the majority of people said no. And when they asked why, the majority of people, now keep in mind this was the 60s, the majority of people said, it looks like a communist document to me. And it's some kind of subversive document. So,
well, I guess we got to get that communist document back up and out into the public eye.
There you go. There you go. And Barbara, thanks for listening on WWRL. Great to hear from you. Keith in Santa Rosa, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Tom. Those green letters from Social Security are kind of scary, but I'm on two other subjects, so I'll go quickly, if I may.
Sure.
Sure. I'm an adjunct professor in the community college system in California. Mm-hmm. So without pardon?
Yes.
Okay. So without going into the specifics of my own case, I'll just tell you some of what goes on. We work at semester to semester at will contracts, meaning we can be fired for no reason at any time, no pension, no medical, no California state disability. They tend to fight all workman's comp cases, no paid office hours, no hours paid to grade. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like Walmart comes to the University of California system.
Yes, they use us to save money. And then to make it worse, and I say this as a liberal myself, we get caught in the political wars between the old guard liberals and the politically correct. So, yeah.
Yeah, what a mess. Okay, Keith.
So I think that that might be a good subject for the future. And if we have the time, I have a quote from Aaron Burr for you.
If it's a short one.
Okay. His farewell address to the Senate. He was vice president after the duel. So he's talking about, the Senate should be the guardian of law, liberty, and the Constitution. It is here, in this exalted refuge, here, if anywhere, will resistance be made to the storms of popular frenzy and the silent arts of corruption, and if the Constitution is destined to ever perish by the sacrilegious hands of a demagogue or the usurper, which God may avert, its expiring agonies will be witnessed on this floor.
Yeah, and he was prescient. Keith, thanks for sharing that with us. It's brilliant. Lyle in Arkansas. Hey, Lyle, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you? I have a question.
Fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. After Bush and Cheney leave office, sooner than later, I hope, can they be charged with wrongful death if the Congress and the Senate find out that they lied to the American people, which we know they did, but when it's brought out in public in court or through the Congress, can they be charged with wrongful death?
You mean a civil action by the families of dead soldiers?
Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect not, and mostly not so much because they might not or might have or might not have committed crimes, but because I believe that when you sign up for the military, you're basically signing a document that says that you realize that you're going into a business that may involve your own death. And regardless of the circumstances, you absolve the government of all responsibility under any circumstances for that.
Yeah.
So I doubt that soldiers would have standing for suit. On the other hand, criminal prosecutions for lying
against us.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about, the parents.
That's the thing. I'm not sure that the parents would have. Well, I don't know. I guess I should just say I don't know, Lyle, because it's an obscure area of law, and B, I'm not a lawyer. So, it's interesting to think about. It's interesting to think about, and it's a good one to pursue. And the real remedy, though, is in the House of Representatives, and that's where John Conyers is starting his investigations right now.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
A special thanks to my producer, David Poole, and to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner at Air America, to Ben over at the White Rose Society and Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, Sue who runs our chat room and our message boards over at TomHartman.com, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on this website, on our website over at TomHartman.com, and to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. We couldn't do it without you, and it's much appreciated. 9.5 minutes before the hour. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Ken in San Diego, California. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about this Assembly Bill 840 that I fully support. But the other day I got a flyer, a packet from AARP. And they mention about three, they say that there's several different programs or healthcare proposals out there. And then they have these petitions that they want you to sign. And it says, I urge you to regard the needs of California seniors as you consider the passage of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's recently proposed health care initiative. In other words, they are pushing Schwarzenegger's proposal rather than AB 840, which I believe is Assemblymember Cool.
Yeah, there's a very simple reason for that. It's the same reason why AARP supported the passage of the Medicare bill with the donut hole and the government can't negotiate for prescription drugs. They were gung-ho in favor of that as well. And, in fact, I was so upset about it, I canceled my membership with them, as did many of us.
The reason
why they do that is because AARP, first and foremost, is an insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're running all these ads right now. And the primary insurer, by the way, who does their insurance, for at least for the donut hole for the Medicare company, for the Medicare thing, is United Healthcare, which is the company that paid its CEO, William McGuire, a $1.7 billion compensation package. I mean, you know, this guy's walking off with $1.7 billion. And it's obscene. It's just like the NRA. You know, the NRA is a lobbying organization for gun manufacturers, and AARP is an insurance company. And there's a bunch of these organizations out there that are presenting themselves as grassroots organizations, when in fact they're AstroTurf organizations.
Uh-huh.
They're making their money off something else. And AARP makes its money off insurance, not off memberships. I mean, they charge for memberships, but they're making the vast majority of their money off insurance. And therefore, I would assume they will always oppose any program that's going to put insurance companies out of business, because it would end their gravy train. And that's why I would say don't take so seriously what AARP has to say. And number two, ever since they were pushing for that Medicare bill, I dropped my membership and I ain't going back. I'm sorry. I will never join AARP. Doug, and I'm an old man here. Doug in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Doug.
Hey, you're great, but I'm getting better.
Good on you, Doug.
I'm getting better because I'm listening.
Well, thank you.
And I'm listening to a lot of stuff out there, and a whole lot of stuff makes good sense. I wanted to get with you yesterday. Didn't have enough time, but you know, I'm going to go back to what you guys are talking about in the afternoon hour, that there's a shining star coming out of the 08 election. And if the guy plays his cards right, like he did this last election, you talked a couple of weeks ago about maybe 13 Republican senators up for election next year.
That's right. It's either 12 or 13, yeah.
Yeah. Howard Dean, Dino and Company, could just literally crush these people with nothing but the honest truth and true facts about what they've been voting for and all that good stuff. We
yep.
could just dominate the Senate like you wouldn't believe. So we may.
Oh, and they are running so scared. They are running so scared. Gordon Smith here in Oregon is trying to cover up the fact that actually has been somewhat successful. The fact that the biggest salmon fish kill in the history of the United States happened here was engineered by Karl Rove and Dick Cheney to
yep.
get Gordon Smith reelected, 5 years ago, and now he's up for reelection. He votes virtually, well over 90% of the time with the Bush and all the other right-wing Republicans. He's a right-wing extremist. He's trying to characterize himself as a moderate. You got the same thing with Norm Coleman in Minnesota, who Al Franken, the guy who I took over
Senator
his program.
Senator Franken's going to smoke that guy.
Oh, you betcha. In fact, I want to get Al back on the program just to give us an update on how he's doing. You got George Voinovich. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of them out there who are.
Yeah, Voin, he just jumped ship, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. That's what I'm saying.
And again, and the same thing in New Mexico, what's his name? Pete Domenici saying, I don't know about this. Well, guess what? He's up for re-election.
If you can get Howard Dean, and I hope somebody from his camp is listening, you could just run a couple of strategic commercials right now, which would just have a long-lasting effect. You would just not believe these 13 people. I'll tell you what. We got a real good chance, and I think you can say
you're spot on, Doug. Doug, I'm sorry, I got to cut you off here, but you're absolutely right. We've got a huge and great chance. By the way, congratulations to Lore, Lore, and I think that's our applause button. There we go. Congratulations, Lore, who posted on the blog over at airamerica.com, the Tom Hartman page. There's a slew of jobs that the government allows aliens to enter to fill the country. There should be a law that the government should provide schooling, retraining, or access to learning these jobs prior to authorizing any permits that opens jobs to aliens. That would support Americans instead of outsourcing. Tell your legislature, fix the problem. Don't add to outsourcing. Train Americans. Make foreign companies pay taxes to sell in the U.S. Give companies tax breaks for the number of Americans hired at decent wages, but no extra credit for paying outrageous salaries. Make our legislators work for us. Great blog posting, Laura. Thank you so much. Coming up Monday on the Tom Hartman program, I'll be challenging conservative Horace Cooper, who says there's a liberal assault on talk radio. Yeah, right. Here it is. Lamar Waldron and I will be debunking Vincent Bugliosi's new book, Reclaiming History. He claims that JFK was killed by Lee Harvey Oswald all by himself. Terry O'Sullivan, the general president of the Labor's International Union of North America, here on labor issues. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.